Beloved Bhagwan, Mao Tzu was noted for his resourcefulness in finding expedient means of working with his disciples. This is illustrated by his conversion of Shi Kung, who was originally a hunter, loathing the very sight of Buddhist monks. One day, as he was chasing after a deer, he passed by Mao Tzu's monastery. Mao Tzu came forward to meet him. Shi Kung asked him whether he had seen any deer pass by. Mao Tzu asked, "Who are you?" "A hunter," he replied. "Do you know how to shoot?" queried Mao Tzu. "Of course I do," replied the hunter. "How many can you hit with one arrow?" asked Mao Tzu. "One arrow can only shoot down one deer," said Shi Kung. "In that case, you really don't know how to shoot," Mao Tzu commented. The hunter then asked Mao Tzu, "Does your reverence know how to shoot?" Mao Tzu replied, "Of course I do." "How many can you kill with one arrow?" the hunter asked. "I can kill a whole flock with a single arrow," answered the master. At this, Shi Kung said, "The beasts have life as you do. Why should you shoot down a whole flock?" Mao Tzu said, "Since you know this so well, why don't you shoot yourself?" Shi Kung answered, "Even if I wanted to shoot myself, I would not know how to manage it." At this point, Mao Tzu remarked, "This fellow has accumulated klesa from ignorance for numberless eons. Today the whole process has come to a sudden stop." Tossing his arrows and bows to the ground, Shi Kung became a monk and a disciple of Mao Tzu. Sometime later, when Shi Kung was working in the kitchen, Mao Tzu asked him what he was doing. "I am tending an ox," the disciple answered. "How do you tend it?" asked Mao Tzu. Shi Kung replied, "As soon as it returns to the grass, I ruthlessly pull it back by its nostrils." This won great approval from the master, who remarked, "You certainly know the true way of tending an ox."
Manisa. There are two kinds of masters, not in any way different in their experiences, but different in conveying their experience to others. One is simply using old methods, well tried, which have given sure results. The other is a creative person who does not follow any traditional method or device to transform a person, but responds to each person according to his needs. Mm-hmm. Matazu belongs to the second category, a very creative and inventive master. He never repeated even himself. Every situation, and he will bring a new device. He will function just as a mirror, and whatever comes spontaneously out of his empty heart, he will use it as a vehicle of Dhamma. This type of masters are very few, because you don't know whether this method is going to succeed. You don't know what will be the outcome. It is simply trusting your own heart, that the heart cannot let you down. This is an immense trust in one's own enlightenment and awakening, that whatever comes out of my illumination is going to succeed. There is no question about it. Hence, a man like Matazu has a tremendous freedom. Other masters have thousands of methods given by the tradition, and they choose one of them, but it is a dead device. Although success seems to be more certain, with Matazu, success is not the point. Success is the last point in the journey. All those first category masters are looking at the success. The method must succeed. And because the method has been used again and has been successful, why bother for a new method? Their emphasis is on the last end, the success. Matazu's method, his approach, is totally different. It depends on the first point of the journey, from where the arrow comes out. If it is coming out from your empty heart, then there is no need to bother about success. That is no more a question to Matazu. His whole life he invented thousands of methods according to the person confronting him, and he had tremendous success. But his success is the success of the empty mirror. He reflected the man so accurately that there was no need to fall upon old methods. One can go straight forward with this man who is confronting him and make out a situation in which the transmission happens, in which heart to heart something moves something is inspired, something takes the light from one heart to the other heart. It is said about him, with Matazu, Zen took on a truly Chinese flavor, open-hearted and not highly controlled. Under Matazu, mysterious meditation and renunciation for the practice of Zazen in the mountains dropped. The speciality of Zen after Matazu was nothing but the fragrance of intense living. He reduced everything to intense inquiry, intense living. Intensity became the focus of his whole teaching. ...130 persons became enlightened under Matazu. Just as an example of his working, Matazu was not noted for his resourcefulness in finding expedient means of working with his disciples. This is illustrated by his conversion of Sih Kung, who was originally a hunter, loathing the very sight of Buddhist monks. One day, as he was chasing after a deer, he passed by Matazu's monastery. Matazu came forward to meet him. Sih Kung asked him whether he had seen any deer pass by. Matazu asked, "Who are you?" Now, it is out of the blue. He is asking about the deers, and Matazu changes the whole situation. In a totally new dimension, such was his resourcefulness, Matazu asks, "Who are you?" This was not the answer, certainly, of the question asked. "A hunter," he replied. "Do you know how to shoot?" He has changed the whole subject matter. "Do you know how to shoot?" queried Matazu. "Of course I do," replied the hunter. "How many can you hit with one arrow?" asked Matazu. "One arrow can only shoot down one deer," said Sih Kung. "In that case, you really don't know how to shoot. Do you see the shifting of situation? Slowly he is bringing him to a totally different thing. He has simply asked, 'Have you seen any deer pass?' He has not come for renunciation. He has not come for initiation. He is not there for any inquiry into truth, but it does not matter. Once you have come in front of Matazu, you will not be able to leave that place changed. Just the very touch of Matazu's air was enough to make a difference . He said to Sikung, in that case you really don't know how to shoot. Matazu commented. The hunter then asked Matazu, does your reverence know how to shoot? Matazu replied, of course I do. How many can you kill with one arrow? The hunter asked, I can kill a whole flock with a single arrow, answered the master. At this, Si Kung said, now you see the climate changing. He has forgotten about the deer and the hunting. At this, Si Kung said, the beasts have life as you do. Killing the whole flock, it is so life negative. And for a master like you, why should you shoot down a whole flock? Matazu said, since you know this so well, why don't you shoot yourself? Searching the deer to shoot, and the deer has life, you have life, why go so far? Why not shoot yourself? You are intelligent enough to understand that the whole flock should not be shot. But if you understand that much, that the whole flock should not be shot, why one deer should be shot? The principle is the same. Don't destroy life. And if you are intent to destroy life, since you know this, said Matazu, well, why don't you shoot yourself? What does it matter whose life, whether a deer's life or your life, is lost? Si Kung answered, even if I wanted to shoot myself, I would not know how to manage it. Shooting oneself is almost impossible. By an arrow, by a gun, that is a different matter. You can just put by the side of your head and you are gone. But by an arrow, space is needed. And you cannot manage by an arrow to shoot yourself. That is almost an impossibility. At this point, Matazu remarked, this fellow has accumulated klesha from ignorance for numberless eons. Klesha is a Sanskrit word. It means, in the original, evil, misery, suffering, torturing others and torturing oneself. Matazu said, this fellow has accumulated klesha from ignorance for numberless eons. Today the whole process has come to a sudden stop. He cannot shoot himself. And he has been suiting his whole life, perhaps for many lives. Tossing his arrows and bows to the ground, Si Kung became a monk and a disciple of Mata Su. Sometime later, when Si Kung was working in the kitchen, Mata Su asked him what he was doing. Do you see that the device has never been used? It is not a device at all. Just a simple conversation in which he turns the whole subject matter to a point where the hunter becomes aware that to kill life is ugly. Up to now he was boasting that he is a great hunter. To destroy his ego of being a hunter, Mata Su said to him that the best way to prove it that you are a hunter, suit yourself. The poor hunter came to a full stop because you cannot suit yourself by the arrow. In that silence in which he started thinking how to suit oneself, he forgot all about deers. He forgot that he is a hunter. In that small gap of silence, Mata Su entered into his heart, which is not visible in the story, which cannot be visible in words. In that full stop, his mind could not function anymore. And the non-functioning of the mind is the right time for a master to enter into the very heart of the disciple. It does not need any effort on the part of the master. It simply and spontaneously happens. Once the gap is there, the same light, the same awakening enters into the man confronting the master. The hunter did not answer. He threw his bow and his arrows on the ground and fell unto the feet of Mata Su and asked for initiation. He has come for a different purpose and got caught into the net of Mata Su. And it was not even a device, but this is how he was resourceful. Any situation, and he will convert the situation in such a subtle way that the person will not be even aware that he is bringing him to a new space to look at the whole situation. He saw the whole situation that he has been destroying life, and to destroy life is absolutely wrong.
He dropped his bow, his arrows. A sudden awakening that it is time to search not for the deer, but to search for oneself, for the source of life itself. He became a disciple of Mathusudana. He started working in Mathusudana's temple. Mathusudana asked him one day what he was doing. "I am tending an ox." The disciple answered, "I have to explain to you that I am tending an ox does not mean exactly what it says. It is a symbolic saying in Zen. There are, just like tarot cards, 10 cards in Tao. Those cards are called tending an ox. Ox is a symbol of your own self. Searching for the self is the meaning of those symbolic cards. When those cards were brought from China to Japan, the last card was dropped for specific reasons. It needed tremendously great understanding for the 10th card. Those cards are made according to Buddha's own description. In the first card, as Buddha has described, according to his description, those paintings were made. In the first card, the ox has escaped into the forest. The man, the owner, is standing, looking all around, and there is no sign of the ox. In the second card, he finds the footprints on the earth. He follows the footprints. In the third card, he sees the ox's back, his tail. He is hiding behind a big tree. In the fourth card, he sees the whole horse, the whole ox. In the fifth, he catches hold of him. In the sixth, he is fighting hard to take him back to the house. In the seventh, he is victorious. In the eighth, he is riding on the horse, coming back towards home. In the ninth, the ox is in its stall, and the man is playing a song on his flute. These 9 cards were taken out of a pack of 10 cards. in China originally, and in Buddha's statement also, a tenth card is described. But it needs really guts to understand the tenth card. Even the Japanese masters thought it is better to drop it, because it is very difficult to make people understand it. Even Buddha said that I am at the ninth card, because the tenth is certainly difficult. The tenth is that feeling so happy that he has found his ox, he takes up a whiskey bottle and goes towards the pub. Now that is very difficult. A Buddha with a whiskey bottle going towards the pub. But I don't want to drop the tenth card. Because it is as symbolic as other cards. You accept ox as yourself. You accept the search and inquiry as your meditation. Part by part you become aware of your inner reality. The tenth is the ultimate point, when you become intoxicated with the universe. That whiskey bottle is not whiskey bottle. Just as the ox is not the ox, they are all symbols. Those masters who dropped that card were a little weaker. It was so simple to explain it, that when you have found yourself, you have found the ultimate nectar. You will be drunk 24 hours. You don't need ordinary alcohol. You don't need any drug. Your very experience will be a drug. And you all know, after meditation, when you start moving towards the canteen, I have been watching. Everybody looks drunk. Few get up early, but very reluctantly. Few are sitting still, utterly drunk. Remembers finally that they have to go to the canteen. This drunkenness, by the way, I want to tell you, is the only possibility for humanity to get rid of all drugs, of all alcohol, because they are very ordinary compared to the purity of your drunkenness that happens at the very source of life. Nothing is comparable to it. It takes you higher. It gives you tremendous euphoria, which is not hallucination. And it lasts. It is not a question that you have to take the drug in more and more quantities, that you have to become addicted to it, you become the nectar itself, you become the euphoria, the ecstasy itself. You don't need anything. Just remembering your Buddhahood is enough to live with immense ecstasy in your day-to-day life. So this, I am tending an ox, you should remember, is an old metaphor for searching the self. Otherwise, you will not be able to understand the anecdote. The disciple answered, I am tending an ox. How do you tend it? Asked Matazu. Si Kung replied, as soon as it returns to the grass, I ruthlessly pull it back by its nostrils. This won great approval from the master, who remarked, you certainly know the true way of tending an ox. As an anecdote in itself, if you don't know its connotations, it is absurd. But if you understand it with all the metaphors, because these anecdotes carry a tremendous tradition, Si Kung replied, as soon as it returns to the grass. Do you understand? We use the word grass for the mundane also. For the rude, for the primitive, for the uncivilized, uncultured. Si Kung says, as soon as it turns to the grass, to the mundane, I ruthlessly pull it back by its nostrils. He is saying, I don't allow myself to be attracted by the grass. I pull myself away from the grass towards the great, towards the magnificent, towards the inner splendor. If you understand this connotation, then you will be able to understand why the master approved it. This won great approval from the master, who remarked, you certainly know the true way of tending an ox. Soseki wrote, when the master without a word raises his eyebrows, the post and the rafters, the cross beams and the roof tree, begin to smile. There is another place for conversing heart to heart, the full moon and the breeze at the half open window. Soseki is a well-known mystic poet and master. What he is saying cannot be said in prose. When the master, without a word, raises his eyebrows, the posts and rafters, the cross beams and roof tree begin to smile. There is another place for conversing heart to heart, the full moon and the breeze at the half open window. Just standing on the half open window, the cool breeze and the full moon, and utter silence in between. A master is a door to the universe. A master in himself is an empty heart. You can see through it the whole universe. Coming closer to the master, in deep love and trust, even his raising eyebrows triggers something in you, the pose and rafters, the cross beams and roof tree begin to smile. Even the posts and the rafters in the presence of a master start to smile. The whole existence smiles in the presence of a master. For the simple reason, at least part of us has reached to the ultimate expression of his potentiality. And he is a symbol that we can also reach to the same height, to the same depth. The disciple's heart immensely rejoices the master's presence, just presence. He may not say a single word. He may remain silent. But just his presence takes you to another world of silence and peace, of love and joy, of blessings that you have not even dreamt of. Manisha has asked a question. There could never have been a master more resourceful in finding expedient means of working with his disciples than you. Who else would create a concoction of zany anecdotes, serious sutras, wild dancing, automated animals, jokes, gibberish and silence such as you serve up every evening? In the context of you, somehow everything feels so absolutely right, Manisa. It is absolutely right. Just in my context, you become aware of it. It is almost as if all the lights go out. These 10,000 Buddhas will be still sitting here, but you will not be able to see them. Then the lights come and suddenly you see 10,000 people sitting around you. You are not alone in the darkness. The Master's context is simply a light in your darkness. Everything seems to be true. Everything seems to be beautiful. But it is not the Master's light that is making them beautiful. They are beautiful in themselves, but a light is needed to see them. If you grow your own light, the Master's context will not be needed. The Master's whole effort is that he should not be needed, that you should be enough unto yourself, that your own light should shine and radiate, that the existence should smile with your smiling heart. It is true that I am a little crazy. Now, Sardar ji, I have not yet told the joke. Don't trust me too much. I use everything. That's why I told the Japanese masters who brought those 10 cards and dropped one on the way. Were not very courageous. Were intelligent, but not geniuses. They could not find an explanation for the 10th card. And to me, without the 10th card, the 9 are useless. What is the point of searching yourself? The whole point is to become a drunk. The 10th card is the most essential. Even Gautam Buddha was afraid. Although he described the 10 cards, he said, "I am myself at the 9. just to avoid the complication of the tenth, the bottle of alcohol in the hands of a Buddha, simply does not look right. Even he avoided the tenth card. But I will not avoid. In many countries, sannyasins wanted to take my picture with a bottle to make the tenth card. I said, it is perfectly okay. Just fill in the bottle Coca-Cola. It is so simple, because in the photograph it won't show that there is Coca-Cola. And your purpose will be served. I am just a little crazy, not too much. You are right that nobody has worked the way I work. And I love to work in every possible way, not denying anything, a total approval of life and all its turns, all its paths. I have accepted it in its totality. So I can use anything as an indicator, and from any point of view, I can bring you to seek and search the escaped ox. Now Sardarji's time has come. At last, before you go into your meditations in search of the ox, it is perfectly good to go in a happy mood, not serious, but smiling. Remember it, existence smiles when you smile, and when you are serious, you are alone. Existence does not bother about your seriousness. If you want the whole world with you, just smile. And look all around and you will see trees smiling and the flowers smiling. And at least when you are entering into meditation, it is good to enter with a smiling heart. I have used jokes for the first time in the whole history of mankind. Because such beautiful jokes, and nobody has used them for meditation. And they create such a good feel all around that one becomes courageous enough A laughing heart is more courageous than a serious one. A serious one doubts, hesitates, thinks twice. The laughing one is the heart of the gambler. He simply jumps in. And meditation is a question of jumping into the unknown. Friar Frug, the Jesuit missionary, is in Africa looking for a few Christian converts. He is marching across the plains with his crucifix and Holy Bible in hand, when suddenly he comes face to face with a huge, ferocious lion. Friar Frug's eyes roll to the back of his head and he drops to his knees in a near faint. Beloved God, Almighty, King of Kings, All-Knowing, All-Seeing, Father of the World, pleads Friar Frug, praying feverishly, save my blessed ass. The lion watches the Christian closely, and then he bows his own head, crosses his paws, and murmurs in a soft growl, Beloved God, Almighty, King of Beasts and Lord of the Jungle, please bless this poor food I am about to eat. Angela Angelovich, the greatest belly dancer in living memory, is going to give her last performance. Angela, says Petrov, her manager, for this performance you must give everything, everything. That night, when the curtains are drawn back, Angela is standing on a platform. High above the stage, wearing a small pair of wings, the orchestra is playing and Angela leaps into the air and lands gracefully on the stage to loud cheers. Immediately, Angela jumps up and daintily climbs a ladder and goes even higher than before. The orchestra plays loudly and Angela springs into space. She spins through the air and lands on her tiptoes. A rope descends and to thundering applause, Angela is lifted right to the roof. The drums roll and then there is a deathly hush. Angela jumps. She flies spinning through the air and lands in the middle of the stage with her legs apart in a perfect split. The audience is hysterical. At last the curtains close and the audience starts to go home. Angela is resting motionless on the stage. Her legs are still split wide apart. Bravo, encore. shouts Petrov, her manager, walking onto the stage, clapping his hand. Petrov, says Angela, will you do me a favor? Yes, my darling, replies Petrov. After a performance like that, anything. Okay, says Angela, then rock me a little and break the suction. Just take your time. Has everybody got it? Where is Haridas? Because he is the polar opposite of Sardarji. They both are great friends. Their friendship depends on one thing. Sardarji can tell any kind of joke. Haridas never gets any. So he laughs. What else to do? Understanding is not his thing. Swami Deva Coconut is standing in his bamboo house watching the waters rise around his ankles. It has been raining constantly for 4 days and the sky is still grey and wet. As the water reaches his knees, Coconut climbs onto his suitcase, and when the water reaches to his knees again, he goes outside and climbs onto the roof of his bamboo house. Just then, Ma Mango Milkshake comes past on a small raft. Come on, Coconut, she calls out, come for a ride. No, thanks, he replies, I'm just going to wait here and watch. Slowly the water climbs up the side of the bamboo house and it starts to wash against Coconut's ankles again. Swami Cleverhead, the group leader, rows up in a small rowing boat. The boat is leaking water fast, but Cleverhead seems to be managing. Come on, Coconut, calls Cleverhead. Let us go out of here. No, thanks, replies Coconut. I'm just waiting here and watching. A half an hour later, Coconut has water around his neck. On top of his bamboo house, just then Captain Klifsky and Captain Kurski, the famous Pollock pilots, fly over in a borrowed helicopter. Captain Klifsky sees Coconut and leans out of the window. Come on now, coconut, he shouts. Are you? Are going to be drowned? Coconut waves back. I am just waiting here and watching. He shouts. Later, somewhere in the realms of the universe, Swami Deva Coconut meets Bhagwan and seems really pissed off about something. I waited, I watched, I witnessed, exclaims Coconut, and you never came to rescue me. My God, says Bhagwan, I sent you 2 boats and a helicopter. Big rock hunk, the famous Hollywood movie star, walks into the lobby of the exclusive Screwing Sense Hotel and accidentally hits gorgeous Gloria on the chest with his elbow. I am extremely sorry, says Rock sweetly, but if your heart is as soft as your breast, then I am sure you will forgive me. That is all right, replies Gloria. And if the rest of you is as hard as your elbow, my room is number 33. Close your eyes, feel your body to be completely frozen. Look inwards with absolute urgency. This moment may be the last moment. Always remember, every moment is possible to be the last moment. Then your urgency remains total. Go deeper, as deep as you can. Because it is your own space, your very life source. Nothing to fear. At the very center of your being, you are connected with the heart of the universe. Your empty heart. Becomes a door to the ultimate heart of the universe. And the moment you feel you are connected and rooted in the ultimate, everything in existence becomes beautiful, blissful. Not only life, but death also becomes a dance, a celebration. Just watch, witness, Nivedana. Relax, let the body lie down. Remember, you are not the body nor the mind, you are the witness, which is far away. Even skies are underneath it. It is a watcher on the hills. Your body is in the dark valleys down. The distance between your witness and your body-mind structure is qualitative. It cannot be bridged. And people go on living in ignorance because they go on thinking that they are the body, they are the mind. And because of this identification with body and mind, they have forgotten the language of their inner being, their inner nature, their universality, their eternity, the Buddha. This beautiful evening, this dance of the rain around the Buddha auditorium and 10,000 Buddhas in utter silence. Relaxed, centered. It becomes a miracle. It is a magic moment. I can see there are no individuals, but only an ocean of consciousness. This is the point where one becomes ultimately drunk. Drunk without any drugs. Let this drunkenness sink in every fiber of your being. Soon you will be coming back. Fill all your buckets of the nectar of the living stream of life and bring it with you. Nivedana, now come back as a Buddha. Silently, peacefully, with grace, remember how Buddha will sit down. And this remembrance has to become the very milieu 24 hours around you. Whatever you do, remember the act has to sow your self nature, your original face, your Buddhahood. Every gesture, every word, every silence should arise from your spontaneity. This is authentic religion. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, Bhagwan.
Can we celebrate the 10,000 Buddhas?
Yes, Bhagwan.